Hello. Welcome to Discovering Jazz, where you and I together discover great music, picking up information to keep jazz old and new alive. My name is Larry Sadman, here in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, sponsored by Peterborough Independent Podcasters. 5 years ago, January 2019, I put together three podcasts, really good ones, I must say, in all modesty, called The Jazz Solo. In those podcasts, I was trying to understand the makeup of a truly outstanding jazz solo. I learned quite a bit, some of it thanks to a 2017 Jazz Times magazine article, and some thanks to putting out queries on a couple jazz sites. I said at some point I wanted to do a part 4, 5, and 6, as there are still so many solos mentioned in that Jazz Times article that I hadn't heard or played, and probably many opinions out there from jazz aficionados. So over 5 years later, here it is, March 2024. Here I am again trying to understand what distinguishes a great jazz solo from one that's just good. I think I can identify a bad or mediocre solo, although of course there's always disagreement. Let's start with one that online piano teacher and the author of his Journey Through the Real Book series, Ron Drotos, considers to be a perfectly constructed solo. It's Herbie Hancock's piano solo on There Is No Greater Love from Miles Davis's 1966 album Four and More. This solo is just after the 7 minute mark of this 11 minute piece, right after George Coleman's tenor sax solo. I'll play the whole thing, then talk about it. Thank you.
Let's go. Davis. Thank you very much. Good night.
You listen to that Herbie Hancock piano solo, and while what he plays there seems to have little relationship to the actual chords, I find that I can follow the melody and figure it out. It is considered by many to be a solo worth learning. I also like what Hancock does in the transition back to Miles Davis playing the head, from an album called Four and More, recorded live in concert, February 1964. That track is There Is No Greater Love. I put out a request to two sites, The Jazz World and Canadian Jazz Recordings, asking for ideas for this series. I had a few great responses, many of them being solos that I had already used in my earlier series, episodes 52, 53, and 54. But here's one I hadn't heard before, recommended by Stephen Saxon. It's slide trombonist Frank Rosolino and his version, recorded in the mid-1970s, but not released until 1995, of All the Things You Are. Mr. Saxon, in recommending it, states, "It's endlessly entertaining and innovative. He plays cleaner than most sax players, but he's playing trombone, and he just never seems to get tired. As a brass player, that's impressive." Unquote. Such a discovery, and while I usually like to play full tracks, since no solo exists in a vacuum, this one just might. So I'll only play the first 8 minutes of this 13-minute track, and you'll hear the head and Rosolino's slide trombone solo. Frank Rosolino with the trio led by pianist Louis Van Dyke, and All the Things You Are, from an album called Fond Memories of Frank Rosolino. Thank you. The trombone of Frank Rosalino from 1973 with the Louis Van Dyke Trio. All the things you are. And I hope that Mr. Van Dyke will forgive me for cutting off his piano solo there. I could have used that tune for my previous series on how they lived and how they died, as Rosalino's story is one of the most tragic, having in 1978 shot both of his sons, then fatally shooting himself. Something I'm sorry to have to say, as it casts such a pall over that amazing solo. Next, Victoria trumpeter Patrick Boyle, who has played some mighty good solos himself, responded to my call in his site, Canadian Jazz Recordings, and mentioned 8 different recordings with notable solos, all Canadian. First on his list was Toronto saxophonist Mike Murley and his solo on the standard I Should Care from a 2012 Juno Award-winning album called Test of Time, with Murley, guitarist Ed Bickert, and bassist Steve Wallace, consisting of recordings made in 1999. While Patrick didn't state why he chose Murley's solo, listening to it, I find it interesting that he starts off the tune creating a very different melody, and a lovely one at that, based on the song's chord sequence, and each soloist follows suit nicely, taking off from what Murley is doing. Then at the end, the tune's actual melody is introduced by Mike Murley. Here are Murley, Bickert, and Wallace with I Should Care. Thank you. Bickert, and Steve Wallace. Some great playing from all of them, but most notable is the opening solo by Mike Murley. I Should Care is the tune. Today, part four of a series that I first put together in 2019 on jazz solos. I'm interested in what distinguishes a great one from a good one. For help on this, I turned to an article in a 2017 issue of Jazz Times called Essential Solos, 40 Improvisations You Need to Know, where jazz players and writers were asked to select some of their favorites. And one can't talk about jazz solos without mentioning the world's first great jazz soloist, trumpeter Louis Armstrong. Jazz journalist Thomas Conrad selected West End Blues from 1928, stating that it began modern jazz history. He wrote, "The heraldic lead-off cadenza, the theme statement like a platonic ideal, the breathtaking ascension of arpeggios climaxing in a high B-flat, the final chorus opening with that same B-flat held for four dramatic bars, an eruption of glorious free phrasing." ¶¶ From 1928, Louis Armstrong and his Hot Five West End Blues. Staying with that Jazz Times article, a selection from German singer and composer Theo Bleckmann as an essential solo was Pat Metheny, and he and his trio's interpretation of Ornette Coleman's Bright Size Life from 1976 on ECM. Bleckmann writes, "I love how Metheny dives right into his solo with no hesitation. The ethereal nature of some of his upward spiraling lines, landing right on those bluesy riffs, while locking in with Jaco Pastorius and Bob Moses, makes me giggle and sing along every time." Unquote. Here it is, the title tune from Bright Size Life, Pat Metheny. Thank you. Pat Metheny with Jaco Pastorius bass and Bob Moses drums. Ornette Coleman's Bright Size Life. Patrick Boyle, who chose that Mike Murley solo in I Should Care as one of his favorites, also chose another one from a different album with those same musicians plus two others, led by drummer Barry Elms. The Barry Elms Quintet, with Mike Murley on saxophone, Kevin Turcotte trumpet, Ed Bickert guitar, and Steve Wallace bass. He was enamored by Kevin Turcotte's trumpet solo, which is no doubt great. But what most resonated for me was the way the three solos work together. Turcotte, after playing the melody, does some nice tuneful variations on that melody in his solo. Then Mike Murley takes it in a rather different direction with a very interesting solo, with Ed Bickert on the last solo, first reflecting on what Murley was doing, then going back to that sensibility introduced by Turcotte and preparing for the re-entrance of the melody. I do think that the greatest soloists, rather than standing by themselves, are best when they are creating a listenable whole. You'll hear it here. Give a listen to it. From 1993, D'Souza, from East West, the Barry Elms Quintet. Thank you. Elms Quintet with solos by Kevin Turcotte, Mike Murley, and Ed Bickert in that order. Finishing with some Duke Ellington at Newport in 1956, one of the 1001 albums you must hear before you die. Drummer Paul Weiss selected this track for Paul Gonsalves' 27 chorus solo. He talks about how all the solo's swagger, boldness, elegance, deep tradition, and curiosity can be traced back to how he sets the solo up. It's two tunes, Diminuendo and Crescendo in Blue. Ellington plays a piano break to conclude the diminuendo. Then he told Gonsalves to blow as long as he feels like blowing. So three solos in this track. Gonsalves' 6-minute saxophone solo, a couple choruses from Ellington, then an ending high note solo from trumpeter Cat Anderson. Thank you. You've been listening to Discovering Jazz. I am Larry Sadman, a.k.a. Larry the Radio Guy. Next week, another episode on jazz solos. Bye for now.